Let's read together Jonah chapter 1, verses 10 through 14. In this section of Jonah chapter 1, we see the response of the sailors to Jonah's testimony that he was a Hebrew and that he feared the one true God of heaven who made the sea and the dry land. Jonah chapter 1, beginning now at verse 10. Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, "Why have you done this?" For the men knew that he fled from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. Then they said to him, "What shall we do to you that the sea may be calm for us?" For the sea was growing more tempestuous. And he said to them, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea. Then the sea will become calm for you. For I know that this great tempest is because of me." Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to return to land, but they could not, for the sea continued to grow more tempestuous against them. Therefore they cried out to the Lord and said, "We pray, O Lord, please do not let us perish for this man's life, and do not charge us with innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you." Let's begin this section of Jonah chapter 1 with some background notes. God had called Jonah to go and preach to that great city of Nineveh, but Jonah did not want to go. Why? Because Nineveh was an Assyrian city, and the Assyrians were the enemies of Israel. The Assyrians were known in the ancient world for their atrocities and cruel treatment of their enemies. Jonah did not want to see any mercy shown to Nineveh, so he disobeyed and ran in the other direction. You know, I was very interested to find out last week that two ladies in this congregation traced their roots back to ancient Assyria. When we get to heaven, maybe Mrs. Salva and Mrs. David will find out that their ancestors heard the preaching of Jonah. Wouldn't that be interesting? So Jonah disobeyed and rose up and fled from the presence of the Lord. You know, I once heard a preacher say that Jonah partially obeyed. The Lord said to Jonah in verse 2, "Arise, go to Nineveh." And verse 3 says that Jonah arose. See, he partially obeyed. He rose up. Did you follow that? Don't worry about it. Listen, when Jonah rose up to go to Tarshish, this was not partial obedience. This was 100% disobedience. But God was not done with Jonah. We've seen that God sent out a great storm which disrupted all of Jonah's well-laid plans to get away. God has ways of doing this, doesn't he? Did you ever have God disrupt your plans for your own good? Maybe he's doing that right now. Notice Jonah's answer to the sailors in verse 9. Remember, this is after the lot had fallen on Jonah and they knew that he was the cause of the problem. Verse 9. So Jonah said to them, "I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." Now remember, this answer is in the midst of the storm, probably given on deck as the wind is howling and the waves are crashing. These Phoenician sailors are scared. They were pagans who worshiped the god Baal. They believed the god Baal, or Baal, controlled the heavens and the sea. But Jonah boldly proclaimed the truth. The one true God, the God of the Hebrews, he's the one that controls the heavens. He's the one that controls the seas. He made the sea. He made the dry land. So Jonah boldly proclaimed this truth, even while he was disobeying God. He feared the Lord, the one true God of heaven, who not only controlled the sea, but he made the sea. And he made the dry land. What a testimony. Right on and very orthodox. But orthodoxy is not synonymous with spirituality. You may want to put that in your notes. Orthodoxy is not synonymous with spirituality. Rightness of theology does not necessarily mean rightness of life. And that brings us then to our first doctrinal point for this section of Jonah chapter 1. A believer's disobedience results in disruption for unbelievers. A believer's disobedience results in disruption for unbelievers. Verse 10 says that the sailors were exceedingly afraid. Their lives are totally disrupted. They've already thrown the cargo overboard to lighten the load, but the ship is about to break up. Verse 13 says that they rowed hard to get to land, but they could not, for the sea continued to grow more tempestuous against them. By the way, this is not some little rowboat, right? This is one of those ancient merchant ships with lots of oars. But the storm gets worse. What a picture of life in a state of disruption because of the storms of life. And in this case, it's because of Jonah, and the men know it. End of verse 10. For the men knew that he fled from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. Do you see the doctrinal point? A believer's disobedience results in disruption for unbelievers. Don't think that you can sin in a vacuum. When you, as a believer, disobey, it not only affects your personal relationship with the Lord, it affects other people, believers and unbelievers. Illustration. You know, a few years ago, a Christian man told me he was getting a divorce from his wife. He said he knew that this was disobedience, but the Lord would forgive him, and then he could move on in his Christian life. Those were his words. Well, I had to point out to him that even aside from the serious sin, his disobedience was disrupting the lives of many people. His wife, his two children, the unbelieving in-laws, the grandparents. And what about the disruption of the Christian testimony in the community and where he worked? He hadn't thought of this. You know, when David disobeyed, Nathan the prophet came and said to David, I'm reading 2 Samuel 12:14. When David disobeyed, Nathan the prophet came and said to David, by this deed you have given great occasion to the enemies of the Lord to blaspheme. A believer's disobedience results in disruption of lives, even the lives of unbelievers. Doctrinal point number two. A believer's disobedience results in rebuke from unbelievers. A believer's disobedience results in rebuke from unbelievers. We already saw back in verse 6 that Jonah was rebuked by the captain of the ship. Look back there at verse 6. So the captain came to him and said to him, what do you mean, sleeper? Arise, call on your God. Perhaps your God will consider us so that we may not perish. Now here in verse 10, all the sailors rebuke Jonah. Why have you done this? Did you ever have an unbeliever say that to you? Why have you done this? And you call yourself a Christian. You know, I remember when I was back in high school, an unbelieving teacher said this to me. Why have you done this? You call yourself a Christian. I was being very disruptive in study hall. And I'll never forget this teacher coming to me and saying, how can you do this when you call yourself a Christian? What a rebuke. Have you ever been rebuked by an unbeliever for your sin? Think of Christians who are unethical in their business practices and have to be rebuked by unbelievers. How tragic when certain TV evangelists have to be rebuked by unbelievers and even go to prison for ripping off the public. You know, the most amazing thing to me here about Jonah's disobedience and his rebuke by unbelievers is that God used Jonah's testimony in spite of his disobedience. Have you followed that? Before Jonah's testimony, these Phoenician sailors were praying to their gods. They were pagan polytheists. But after Jonah's testimony, they were monotheists, praying to the one true God and calling him Lord. Look at verse 14. Therefore they cried out to the Lord and said, we pray, O Lord, please do not let us perish for this man's life, and do not charge us with innocent blood. For you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. And after the storm is over, they don't go back to their old gods. Look at verse 16. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly and offered a sacrifice to the Lord and took vows. These do not sound like foxhole conversions to me. These men did not go back to their old ways once the pressure was off. They sacrificed and vowed to the Lord. How ironic in one sense. Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh and preach to the Assyrian pagans there. But God used Jonah, in spite of his disobedience, to witness to these pagan sailors, and they were converted. What a God of grace. He can even use us when we are disobedient. However, that in no way condones our disobedience. It in no way condones or justifies our disobedience. And we will be rebuked by unbelievers when we disobey. A believer's disobedience results in rebuke from unbelievers. What about practical application from this section of Jonah chapter 1? Would you rather die than change? Would you rather die than change? You know, when the sailors asked Jonah what they should do so that the sea would be calm for them, Jonah replies in verse 12, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea. Then the sea will become calm for you, for I know that this great tempest is because of me." Notice what Jonah did not say. He does not say, "You want the sea to be calm? Let me tell you, it's because of my disobedience. So turn the ship around and head for home so that I can obey the Lord and the sea will be calm." No, Jonah does not say that. Why not? Why does he rather say, "Just pick me up, cast me into the sea"? Because Jonah would rather die than change. Jonah was not yet ready to go to Nineveh. How about you? Would you have been ready by this time? Or would you rather die than change? You see, Jonah was satisfied with the ways of the Lord until he realized that the Lord wanted to extend mercy to Nineveh. This was unwanted grace. Jonah did not want this change. He would rather die than change. Would you rather die than change? What about a change in your lifestyle so that you can be a more effective witness? What about a change or changes that the elders and spiritual leaders of this church might want to bring about for what they believe is best for everyone in the congregation or for a more effective testimony in the community? Are you willing to change, or would you rather die than change? I know Christians that take that position. They would rather die than change. They are either so legalistic or steeped in their traditions that they would rather die than change and see God move the congregation in some new direction or with some new ministries. They would rather die and take the church with them. We don't want our church reaching out to the inner city. Don't take us out of our comfort zone. We've always done it this way, so don't rock the boat. These folks would rather die than change. They would rather die and take their church with them. Meanwhile, the Ninevites are under God's judgment. What about us? Do we really want the Lord's will? Do we really care about the lost people in the Ninevites, for example? Would we rather die than change? Would you rather die than change?